Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have Peter Green join us from InfoStar of Madison. Visits with us monthly to help with your personal computing problems. And if you have one, I hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234, the number for you to call. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page and post a question there. And Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
Great to have you with us. And we have, we're talking about upgrading our computer operating system. That's one of the things we wanted to zero in a little bit today. What does that mean exactly? What is it, and what does it affect?
Well, when you upgrade a computer, there's two ways of looking at it. One is looking at, are you going to upgrade a component or are you going to upgrade the entire system and move to a new computer? Or are you going to upgrade the operating system? Upgrading the operating system can be a challenge depending upon how you use your computer. If you're using standard things like probably Microsoft Office products, web browsing, and email, typically those are not what are considered large challenges when you're moving to, whether you're upgrading Windows or you're upgrading a Mac, because they usually, you know, cover dealing with those applications. It's when you're using specialized software and there are compatibility issues. Mm-hmm. And the manufacturers, I know Microsoft puts one out. I'm not sure if Apple does in term, but they do list compatibility issues on their website with the different operating systems as far as, you know, what works, what doesn't work. And typically the software will tell you, you know, if there are problems, you know, if you check with the manufacturer. Microsoft puts out a compatibility tool or an operating system check tool on their website, so you can actually run it on your system before you upgrade the operating system to see whether or not your system will have any issues that they can foresee with the software that's installed. Sometimes there are printer issues. Now, I've upgraded my Mac and had a printer compatibility issue. So how do you fix that? Sometimes you don't fix it. You know, it becomes a known issue, a known problem, but no one solved it. So it's not, you know, Apple is not immune, Microsoft is not immune, Linux is not immune, Ubuntu, you know, all the different operating systems out there. There's so many different issues to deal with in terms of hardware and software, printers, scanners, gadgets, you know, iTunes. And whenever Apple comes out with a new device, they're upgrading their iTunes to be compatible with their new device. So, you know, if they come out with a new iPad, a new iPhone, different version operating system, then there's, you know, and sometimes you have to make a decision. Do you want to upgrade to it or not? In my case with my iPhone, I have chosen not to upgrade to the latest operating system because it would undo all the things that I've done with my iPhone that I don't want to undo. So you have to make choices like that. So, you know, upgrades are not always the right thing to do. You know, sometimes just staying put with what you have because it works is a better option.
How do they figure out when it's time to upgrade it when they get so many thousand complaints? Or
well, one of the things, like I said, is new devices.
New devices.
Trying to be compatible with new hardware. The other thing is, you know, they have a team of people that are always working on things, and, you know, eventually they reach a point in time where they decide that, hey, you know, we've got enough new features that this is worthy of either a service pack or a slight version upgrade, but not a full upgrade to a brand new operating system. So, you know, they pick their moments.
And somebody asked me, what's a service pack? And it's probably worth mentioning. What
a service pack is, something where there have been so many upgrades or changes that have been found out to the different components in the operating system that it's worthy of just packing it all together into a service pack. And typically, boy, they used to be a lot less than what they were in terms of how large But you can burn, you know, a CD with one of these. So sometimes they give you an option of actually purchasing a CD instead of, you know, downloading it because it is so large.
Yeah.
So it's just a point in time where there's just so many things that have gone on that they decide, hey, you know, a service pack is worthy.
Well, connectivity is an issue always. I think Jim in Caledonia has a question relating to that. So let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Well, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a new Dell that I just purchased about a month ago and transferred the files from my old system to this one using a cable, and everything seemed to work fine until last week. I could not get on my Gmail. I could not get to Google. I could get to the bank. I could get to Amazon, Games, MSN, just about anywhere. But it would not Google. It would come up with a message that says, whoops, cannot get there. Maybe the site is off. Yet when I hook up my laptop, everything works fine. And I don't know where to go. I've run malware on there. I've done a CCleaner. I've done a couple of different things. And I'm about to just revert the system restore back to original. I don't know where else to go.
So you said it's on a new Dell system?
Yes.
Which are you using, Windows 7?
Yes. Both machines have 7.
Okay. Which browser are you using?
Well, I tried Explorer and the Red Fox. What's it?
Firefox?
Firefox, yeah.
Yes. And I also have Google Chrome on here, but it won't get to Google Chrome because it won't get to Google.
Yeah.
So you're saying with both web browsers, it's not allowing you to go, or all those web browsers, it's not allowing you to go to Google's Gmail site?
That's correct. Google itself.
But you can go to others?
I can go to others, yes.
Okay. You might want to go into, see if you have your Windows firewall on.
Okay. What I did is I downloaded AVG and took off the other one, McAfee.
Okay. It sounds to me like it's got, for some reason, it's got the IP address for your Google Gmail, and Google is blocked. So it's at the operating system level?
Well, that's what I was thinking, yeah. And I could not figure out where or why.
So if you go into in the control panel and Windows Firewall,
okay.
You'll have to look under the cover and, you know, where the settings are there. You might actually want to turn it off and see if it works.
I see. Turn off the firewall.
Right, and see if it works without the firewall.
There
is a section in there where you can actually put in addresses, and somehow you might have inadvertently approved of blocking it.
Okay.
Yeah.
In what area of the control panel is the firewall?
You'll see in the very bottom, it'll say Windows Firewall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Because if you're having problems across multiple browsers with the same site, then it's at the operating system level and not in the software level. Follow the logic?
That makes sense.
The common denominator is the operating system.
Yeah, there you go, Jim.
Especially if you're able to use the rest of the the web and stuff.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Andrew in Milwaukee, we turn to you. Hi, Andrew.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm working in Microsoft Office Word 2003, and a couple of things. One thing just sprang up out of nowhere. I get a split screen whenever I open any Microsoft Word document, and I don't want it. And I know how to get rid of it, but as soon as I even go to, like, print preview and go back to regular view, it goes back to that split screen, and I don't know how to get rid of this thing permanently.
You might want to, in Microsoft Word, there's a section for options.
Yes.
And there's a lot of options in Word and Excel and all their software.
Right, right. So, I've been using Word for almost 20 years, so yeah.
Yeah, so you might want to go in there, but you also might want to do a Google search on the problem and see where it is. You know, save yourself some time, because I'm sure you're not the only one that's been confronted with it.
Okay, but I have gone into options and in view, mm-hmm. and I can't find anything that would permanently remove this. Anyway, I'll do that. And one other thing, I have I'm a writer, and over the years I changed my formatting for mm-hmm. my documents. So I'll go back to work on something, and I want to change the whole normal setup. But of course, when I open the old version, the normal that it comes up there when I want to go to styles and formatting is the normal from that time with the same font and everything. Is there one way I can do this with just one stroke and, like, highlight the whole thing and say convert to the current normal that I'm using?
I think you have to go in and you have to make the appropriate changes and then save it in the preferences. I don't think there's like a global way of doing that.
No.
Okay.
But there may be some shareware or freeware out there. You might want to go to a site like CNET, CNET.com.
Okay.
And do a search on what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And you might find a utility program that somebody wrote that will allow you to do that.
Oh,
In other words, it knows where to do all the right, you know, check boxes.
Yeah, right.
And it'll just ask you the questions, you fill in the answers, and then when you say yes and apply it, it'll go do all those things for you in one fell swoop.
Okay, that's what I'm looking for. Yeah. All right, well, thanks very much.
Yeah, yep, thanks a lot for calling. We had a Facebook question from Paul who was wondering if you had an opinion on how well a power line bridge would work to extend internet through an older home. If so, any models or brands to recommend?
That's a very interesting question, because I remember when they first just talked about being able to do that. In other words, extending a network through just the power lines.
Yeah.
And I purchased a kit, if you want to call it a kit, because you need 2 points. So the company that makes that is called TrendNet. I have not tried it. They say the upper end of the scale is 200 million bits per second, which is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Way faster than most people's internet connections. So, you know, more than suffice extending a network. What I would do is I would go to a site like TrendNet.com for the company and look at their requirements, look and see if there are any issues that they may point out to in terms of, you know, putting it in an older home. I might even pick up the phone and try calling them and talking to one of their support engineers and see if there are some kind of tests that you can do before you invest in the product.
Yeah.
Product's not very expensive, less than $100 to go from a point A to a point B. I think there's a limit of like 8 connections, but it would allow you to bridge a network. So I would do what we call the due diligence, do some background research, and ask some of the questions, you know, will this be a problem in older home, things you should look for. And then usually there are some return policies. It might be a restocking fee if you do have a problem with it. But I know if you can't – what I've been frustrated with local retailers is, number one, I don't feel they are in tune with keeping the networking stuff up to date. Like, I went to look for gigabit Ethernet cards to replace them in desktops, and I went to a couple of places, and it was like skeletal of their product availability. So it forces me to go online to look for a solution. Something like TrendNet or that kind of product, I don't know if you would find it in a store locally, and you probably would have to go online to find something like that. So where do you go? Buy.com, Tiger Direct, CompUSA, I believe, is owned by Tiger Direct, but you go to CompUSA. And the other thing is, the other retailers might have it available online, but not in the store. So
there you go.
And then if you live locally, here's a little trick. Some of them give you free shopping. Some of them want to charge you for it. But if you live in Wisconsin, and I'm not saying northern Wisconsin, but if you live in probably central, south central Wisconsin, you're usually within a day of Chicago. A lot of the stuff comes out of one of their distribution centers, which happens to be in the Chicago area. So you're basically a day away. If my luck has been, if you order it probably before, let's say 1 o'clock, you might get it the next day. They may be able to fulfill your order before the end of the day, and you might get it the next day because you're just one day
out
on shipping.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. An email from Paul who says, when I take my Dell Studio 1740 laptop away from home to give a presentation, all my desktop icons are scrambled around the screen. The computer is running on AC power at all times, but at home it runs through an APC battery backup surge protector. While away, I use a different surge protector. Why does this happen, and is there anything I can do to prevent it? Thank you very much.
Boy, I haven't heard of that one. Scrambling the icons on the desktop.
No, I haven't either. And with a surge protector?
Yeah, I don't know if that would happen.
Is there a different power?
That shouldn't. You can't move icons because of, you know, impulse doesn't shock them into moving.
No. No idea on that one. And if you probably can't take the same surge protector with him out of the house.
I would be more inclined to do a search to see if what may cause icons to scramble. And there might be something that you're inadvertently doing without even realizing it when you're shutting down your system. Because I know, like on the iPhone, if you're not careful, you can get your desktop icons to basically waver.
Wiggle. Yeah.
And you could accidentally delete one. So, you know, and people dial me by accident, you know, that happens too. So sometimes you inadvertently do something without even realizing it.
Nick in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
A very unique question for you. I've looked online. I can't find it. But I like to change my clock down the right-hand corner. Instead of having just a regular time, I like to have universal time. Any suggestions, or is there any type of programs where you can have a clock on there with universal time?
So you're talking about the little clock on the lower right-hand corner, right?
Yeah, because when I turn my ham radio on, I always turn the computer on to look up people's call signs and stuff.
Right.
And it'd be nice to have the little time down there in UTC, like universal time, coordinated time.
Yeah. You know, I know how you just click on it, you know, for changing the date and time settings.
Yeah.
That's probably like one of those little gadget or shareware programs where, again, you know, if you go to a place like CNET.com or Simtel, you can probably do a search on that, and you'll probably find somebody that's, you know, created, you know.
Another ham operator.
Probably created that and a lot more.
Well, I found one, but the thing is, it's way off. Like, I'll check the universal time, and that thing will be way off. I was just wondering, because to know the odd things on the internet. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I would be looking for.
All right, good luck. Thank you for calling. Shane in Lancaster, your turn. Hi, Shane.
Yeah, good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
Great.
Good. Say, I've used McAfee and the Stinger executable from McAfee for redirects. I use Firefox almost exclusively on a Windows XP computer. And I'll just do innocuous Google searches. You know, I could look for Jurgen Klinsmann and find out his status as U.S. coach or something. And I get redirected. And if I use the forward and back arrow indicators on the top of Firefox, I can avoid the redirect, but it takes 3 or 4 times, and I can't seem to wipe them out. What approach would you take to getting rid of them?
You might not have many options. You know, the network, the internet's pretty complicated. And in terms of trying to do these, you know, trying to do some redirects, some of the, you know, the search engine stuff, they've got farms of servers trying to, you know, follow through on all the different looks and results. And you may struggle with that.
Well, you know, on my home computer, I'm almost always, the redirect is towards some type of commercial or advertising activity. But at my work computer, it doesn't matter. In the same search, I'll go right to a successful Google result, whether it's Wikipedia or some other thing. There's a,
right.
there's a legitimate link to be arrived at. But on my home computer, almost always, I've got to go through at least one or two redirects before I can successfully read what I'm looking for.
Yeah, it might be because of your ISP as well.
Oh,
your
okay.
difference might be coming from your ISP. You could probably do some research on that in terms of, you know, what you're looking for and, you know, look at your ISP at work and look at the internet service provider that you have at home.
Mm-hmm.
And you might want to, you could probably inquire with them as to
right,
why you're seeing the difference.
I'll ask my home ISP for some tech help because they're generally very good about it.
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Aaron wonders in an email, how about upgrading to a Linux OS and its benefits? I've been using several different Linux over the years with great success. Many consumers don't realize the benefits of Linux or the Linux system. Could you comment on that?
It works great. You know, probably one of the things that most people looking for support. It's probably more for do-it-yourselfer because, you know, unless you go around talking to your neighbors and, you know, see if any of them are Linux users. As far as applications, you know, you have to just see what, you know, what are you using. If you could use Star Office and other Office compatible products, Firefox is available and so forth. Excuse me. So it's a matter of, you know, what are you using your system for and, you know, whether it's the right choice for you. I mean, I've done it and I could do it. Do I choose not to? There's not as many users as there are out there for, you know, Windows and Apple and, and then, you know, from a business standpoint, you know, what applications are you using for the business? if you're a sole proprietor and you don't have a lot of employees and, you know, you could probably find something that's like a QuickBooks compatible or, you know, something like that. But it's a matter of, you know, finding the right software for what you do, then the hardware.
Yeah.
And, you know, throw in the mix the operating system. If the operating system supports it and you're comfortable with it, then it's a great decision.
On to Bob and Eau Claire. Bob, hello.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hi. Good.
Yeah. Say, I'm a kind of a dyed-in-the-wool Mac guy, but I do have an iPad, and I'm just kind of curious about getting a tablet that my wife might be able to use. And I was looking at the, I think, is it the Kindle that is Amazon's product?
Right, yep.
Am I correct in understanding that that particular tablet is not backlit?
I'm not, you know, they have a couple of different versions of the Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
I would just go online and check the specs on it.
Okay.
I honestly don't know. I haven't.
But, you know, the Kindle is basically, you know, for an e-book reader application.
Right.
So, you know, if that's all that, you know, she's really looking, you know, you're trying to provide for her, that, you know, that's a good, you know, a good alternative. And I think Barnes & Noble has the Nook is their
the other one.
E-book reader. The iPad is, you know, you can read books, but you can do a lot. There's just a lot more. But it's also a more costly alternative. And there are other tablets that are out there. The biggest thing that I would caution with is you know, just making sure in terms of comfort of the touch screen and how it works.
Right.
I've ordered some things from the Far East that came in that I couldn't believe how poor the touch screens were. So, you know, just evaluate them, see if you're comfortable with it.
There you go. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Rick in Southwest Wisconsin, on to you now. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. Peter, could you name a safe functional program that one could use to record audio off the net that they're listening to, please?
To record audio?
Right. You know, when you're listening to speeches or maybe even some music on, you want to record it off. Say, gee, I'd like to save that.
Well, probably, I think you could probably do that with something like RealPlayer and Winamp. Winamp would probably give you a lot of controls, bells and whistles for doing something like that.
Are these things you can get for free on the net, or do you have to buy them?
Yeah, Winamp has been around for a long time. Okay. There are other programs out there that probably have more features in terms of if you want to slice and dice it. But, you know, as far as recording and playback, those are probably the two, you know, Roxio might even have an application because they're large in the CD, DVD field.
How do you spell that?
R-O-X-I-O.
Okay.
So, let's see, Roxio. Creative Labs probably put something out.
Okay.
So Creative and then Labs and Winamp. So you got a few alternatives. What you might want to do is, again, you know, I refer people to CNET because there's two things going on there. Number one is if it's a popular subject, they will find or have solutions, and then they will also comment on the solutions as related to the others. That, you know, in other words, they're reviewing them, giving you some feedback. And then the other nice thing is that over a period of time, as the downloads occur from their site, they get end-user feedback. So you get feedback and comments from other users in terms of what it's able to do, what it's not able to do, which may help you make a decision before you even, you know, decide to download it.
And that's just C-N-E-T.
Well, no, C-N-E-T.
C, no dash.
No dash. They use a C-slash, but when you're in when you're online, it's just C-N-E-T.com. They used to have a TV show and... I don't know if they still do that anymore, but
okay,
it might be out there somewhere as a subscription thing. But.
Good luck, thanks, Rick, for calling. Appreciate it. Chris emailed, "I'm unable to join my wireless network with my iPod Touch. I was able to in the past, however, I'm not sure why it will not join the network now. The network does appear and lets me select the network." It just says unable to join even after resetting the network settings in the Touch. Any suggestions there?
Okay. What I've done in the past, and sometimes it's a simple thing that you don't even realize, is actually doing just shutting it off and turning the device back on. Sometimes that fixes it because sometimes we don't even, you know, shutting it off, I mean really shutting it off like a reboot.
Yeah.
Actually helps those devices. So that's one quick fix. Another one, I don't know if there are iTouch software updates, but that would be hard to do unless you're hooked to wireless. The other thing might be to if the hard reboot doesn't work, would be to turn off the settings for networking, shutting it off, and then turning it back on, and then redoing the settings.
Yeah.
Okay, and seeing if that fixes it. The other option, which is not typically a fun one, would be to go into the router and, you know, log into it, save its settings again, just acknowledge and save them, and reboot the router, and then see if that helps.
I know with my iPad, you know, you rarely turn it off. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's...
But sometimes you have to.
But I have had to power it off and start it back up again, and then...
Then it works.
Then it worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the quickest.
And sometimes you don't even realize because you think, well, it goes to sleep, it's off.
No, I mean, it's not.
It's not.
It's
you
not.
Really need to do a hard shut off and turn it back on.
Facebook question from Phil. What would be the downside of using an external hard drive as a backup for a laptop and desktop? This would be a second backup since I've got have business materials on those machines. With the drives being so cheap, how long should I assume moving parts in such a storage device will last?
Hmm. Well, in the meantime between failure on these hard drives is a very long time. Some of them fail within a year.
Yeah.
You know, they're mechanical devices. You could spend a little bit more money and get what's called an SID, you know, that has no moving parts. And they talk about, you know, 1 million, 2 million hours mean time between failure. But they're more expensive.
But for a business.
But, you know, in terms of backing up, you know, I think you said a desktop and a laptop.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you can keep things straight on it, you know, it's no big deal, and it's great yeah. that you're doing backups. I know in a network environment, D-Link makes a box that hooks up to your router or switch, and you can put in whatever size hard drives you want, and you know, you just basically put them in there, install software. I use a program called Yadis, Y-A-D-I-S. It's a free backup program, and you can tell it to save multiple versions. And when the system comes up, it logs in, writes the files to the backup attached storage, and that's it.
Perfect.
Now, I have to comment that Apple's backup Time Machine works great for Apple users. If you don't have a drive, external drive hooked up to your, you know, Mac, whatever, and you're using the version of the operating system that has Time Machine in it, you're missing out.
Yeah.
Because it will save your hard drive contents on a regular basis and allow you. I don't know if you ever used it, Larry,
where
you can go back to the time, the date and the time.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it. I really don't know how to.
It's amazing.
You go back to the date and time, you can drill down on your system to the file that you're looking for. You know, just like you're using, you know, Finder, just, you know, go find what you need. Versus Windows solution is not so much backing up your files as it is restoring it to the operating system settings. So it's a totally, you know, it's a different fix.
Way. Yeah. Yeah. Jerry and Duluth. I'm sorry, Jerry in Dakota, Minnesota, not Duluth, Dakota. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you doing, guys?
Good, Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yep, I'm finally getting hold of you. And, well, I finally calling it. I got in right away, too. So anyway, my question is, I have a new HP computer. I haven't plugged it in yet because it says to wait 20 minutes after you first plug it in, and I'll bet you that's to load the bloatware on the thing. And I was wondering if there's any way that I can prevent loading the bloatware, such as Norton antivirus and that sort of thing.
It's usually going to prompt you with questions as related to, you know, if you want to subscribe to it and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, just pay attention when you're answering the questions.
Okay. Well, if something like Norton, you know, does get put on there, or if I do put it on there, mm-hmm. Can I use something like C-Clean? Or I think there's the computer comes with an uninstaller to remove stuff like that. Or do I have to go actually to Norton and use their uninstall program?
With Norton, I'd probably use theirs first, and then I'd follow it up with CCleaner to make sure that it is
gets
gone.
Everything. Huh?
Yeah.
Yep.
Because
sure.
CCleaner has a good registry cleaner,
mm-hmm.
and it will get rid of orphan file referrals and orphan locations that don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That tend to slow your system down.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. A Facebook question from Lori. My husband and four-year-old were playing a game on my computer, and after he was finished, my screen resolution was altered. I've tried to restore it back to where it was through display properties, but none of the options fit my screen anymore. Now when I draw a circle or square, they appear as ovals and rectangles. My husband recalls a dialogue box popping up to which he answered yes, but does not remember what it said. I'm using Windows XP Service Pack 3. And the husband's apparently could well be in the doghouse here.
Yeah.
She didn't say that, but.
Yeah. Well, one thing is if your system, this is a good example where restore actually might come in handy. If this didn't happen too long ago and you have restore turned on your system, you could go into system tools. So you go into, click on start, accessories, programs, accessories, system tools, and then system restore. And then go and find a restore point that is prior to when the game occurrence happened. And then restore your system to those settings. Because somewhere, whether there might be an adapter program that came up that had that little box, or some buried option where you're having a hard time finding it, like you said, display properties and nothing seems to work. But if you have that restore turned on, it'll take your system back to prior to when they were using the game and made any of the changes.
And it will restore family life back to a...
Now that's the easy way.
Yeah, that's the easy way.
The other way would be to right mouse click on your desktop, go into properties, and then there might be something where you have to change the screen settings. There are a number of different areas there. But when you make the changes, make notations on what they were and what you're changing them to, and see how it works.
Sort of hit and miss.
Yeah. Yep.
Jackie in Sun Prairie, it's your turn. Hi, Jackie.
Hi there. I'm bereft because I don't have a computer right now because the OS system on my Mac book, which I bought, which is in 2008, was recursing. I think it may have gotten hot, but I took it in to a tech, and he proceeded to call me a few days later and tell me that the whole He suspected that the OS system had been corrupted, and it turns out that the whole hard drive, he said, is completely wiped out now as he was trying to repair it. And what do I do now?
Well,
I mean, I'm surprised. It's like I got it in 08.
Computers are appliances. They do fail.
Yeah. And all my appliances seem to fail within two or 3 years. Jeez. But go ahead.
Well, I mean, sometimes you get lucky and they last a really long time. I know, like, knock on wood, the AC unit, which is a big unit for, you know, a big purchase for a house, for my house, has been fine. It's 26 years old.
Good for you.
Yeah, I lucked out. But I've also had it where, you know, I've had a computer for, you know, maybe half a year, a laptop. And the hard drive goes out, and they're like, "Oh yeah, they get hot." Well, that's great. So, what's the solution? Well, they replace it free of charge when it's in warranty, but then after that, you're on your own.
Right.
But it still is hot because that's how they designed the computer. Was poorly designed. So there are moving parts in a computer. The main moving parts are in the hard drive. And then, of course, the keyboard, you know, you're constantly using the keyboard. And capacitors are another issue that seem to blow. I mean, Dell settled a humongous lawsuit for having poorly designed system boards with, you know, capacitors that would prematurely fail. So what are you to do? Well, one is making sure you back up your hard drive.
Yes.
And if you've got backups of your data, then, you know, if they're saying it's just the hard drive, your option is to replace the hard drive, have the operating system reloaded on it, applications reinstalled, and then your data put back on it. Could be an expensive proposition. And the other alternative is that you get a new system, but you still have to, you know, put the applications on it that you were using, and then you have to put your date on it. So there's still an expense in terms of time in doing that.
Yes,
and
yes.
I know a three-year-old Mac system, no matter what it is probably still got some value to it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
I wish I had better news for you.
I had a friend who had a very expensive Mac less than a year, and there went the hard drive.
Now, is it a laptop or is it a desktop?
It's a laptop. It's a MacBook, and it surprised me. I thought that the heat was maybe there was more heat in that machine than there should be, but I didn't realize that they were so fragile from that point of view. So I was just wondering, what would you recommend for a backup on that? Because I backed up my PC all the time, but with my Mac, I just kind of thought that, you know.
Well, I was going to say with your Mac laptop, what you might want to consider doing is putting in a solid state hard drive.
Yeah.
You know, if you really didn't, like, in my Mac laptop, I have a 500 gig hard drive, but I don't use that kind of space, but that's what it came with.
Yeah.
But you could buy these solid state hard drives and maybe put a 120 gig hard drive in it, and it's going to be more than enough for what you need, and it's going to be faster, and it's going to run not only quite well, not much quieter because it's, you know, but it has no moving parts in it. So it'll be slightly faster, and it's going to be cooler, and it might last longer.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls now as we talk personal computers with Peter Green, Chris, and Darlington. You're next. Hi.
Hi. My question is, I don't own a computer, and I use the computer at the public library. I wanted to join a forum, and they won't accept me because of my email address. So my question is can these websites differentiate between that someone's coming from, say, Ymail versus a privately owned computer?
So you're saying that they're refusing to let you join because of your email address?
Yes.
That's kind of odd.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not a forum that charges or anything, but I thought I saw a post somewhere saying that they would only go to addresses that people have their own servers. Does that make sense?
Having their own servers means that it's an actual domain versus something like Gmail or Yahoo or Hotmail, that kind of stuff.
Oh, so in terms of, say, I'm a small business, they would maybe I have to own my own domain name to participate, do you think? Or?
That's what it sounds like, based on what you told me.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, to own your own domain name, you can register. There are a number of different what they call registrars. I know a real popular one that I've used that I haven't had any issues with is called GoDaddy, GoDaddy.com. And there are others out there. Depending upon what you pick, the cost varies, you know, per year, the renewal, and you can actually sign up and have them for 10 years so that you don't have to renew it every year, but it might vary anywhere from, I'm just going to guess, like, $8-$9 to maybe $15 a year. To me it's a huge moneymaker for some organization out there that says they oversee this stuff, but they don't really do much for what they oversee.
why would somebody differentiate between, say, a Ymail or Google Mail and having a domain name? Why would they?
That's their call. That's just something that they decided. Now, you know, I've had beefs with some people that call themselves like God of the Internet and create a blacklist for blacklisting, you know, email addresses that you can't receive email from. And then internet service providers indiscriminately using someone like that who created what they call their blacklist to hold people at ransom, you know, to prevent spam. So, you know, some of these people make these decisions and it's because they can.
Yeah, just because they can.
Yeah.
There you go.
And it can be frustrating. But some of the people make those decisions just because they can, and that's the way they play the game.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, there is somebody out there who calls himself God of the Internet and says, I'm going to eliminate spam, and holds you ransom, you know, because you happen to have your domain on a server that has somebody that's doing spam and makes them angry.
Oh.
So,
Lana in Sun Prairie, hi to you.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a Dell computer that's about a year old, and in the last 2 weeks, I've tried to get onto a certain website, and what comes back is that basically it says, oops, Internet Explorer could not find, and then it gives me the name of the website, and it's only one website that happens to. When I try and ping it on the command line, it says the same thing. It says, the ping request could not find host. Please check the name and try again.
Did you check the name and try it again?
Yep.
And did you try it with multiple browsers and still the same problem?
Yep. Mozilla Firefox does the same thing.
Yeah. I guess this goes back to the earlier caller we had with, you know, the Windows firewall. And looking and see if maybe that might inadvertently be, you know, something that you've blocked.
And how would I have done it? Because I've been able to get it on like a month ago, but I can't now. And my son can't get it on from his computer either in the same he uses the router and the modem that I do.
Okay. Wondering if there's something, you know, the routers, there's a lot of different routers out there. You know, I don't know if somehow the router is filtering it out and blocking it. It's just one address.
It's just one address, yeah.
And you, of course, have the company or product name or whatever, and have just typed that in to see what pops up.
Right.
And nothing comes up?
Nope. I mean, he uses his cellular phone. He's got a BlackBerry, and he uses that, I thought, through our internet and has been able to get that website on his BlackBerry. So I'm just really puzzled why this one website is not working for me.
It's a mystery to me, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's got to be something that's blocking it. I would look and see, probably do a Google search on, I mean, this is how I do my own tech support, is I would do a Google search on things that block web addresses.
I don't know if it'd be something that why the BlackBerry would get it, not something else. Maybe it's
website works but can't access it.
It's maybe somebody else has an idea on it too. We can't help you here.
It sounds like it's at a system level, not at the browser level. So there's got to be something that IP address or that name is in, perhaps in the registry of the system it's just being blocked.
Yeah. We had Jan from Delafield has a possible cause for the scrambled icons we were talking about earlier. He said that when he's working on his laptop at home, he's using an external monitor, but when he works off site, it's the laptop monitor itself, and the icons are scrambled. So he thinks it's the drivers for the monitor, but doesn't know how to fix it. I don't know how you'd fix that.
That sounds like a possibility, because you're really using the keyboard, but you're looking at a different desktop, and it's just shuffling them when you're powering to that external monitor. It's the layout is different.
Yeah, that could well be. An email from Larry.
The only thing I could think of is when you shut down is maybe sure, you shut off the system before you unplug things.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sometimes people don't do that. You just shut off the monitor.
So shut it off.
Yeah, and then when you're on the laptop, make sure you shut it off and don't put it in sleep mode.
Yeah.
So there's no electricity going, and then when it comes up, it should be fine.
Yeah, that's at least worth a try.
I know a lot of people put things to sleep.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily the best thing to do.
Right.
Okay. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal consultant, will be with us until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for WPR comes from the Oneida Nation Museum, featuring a variety of exhibits, including original Iroquois artwork, baskets, beadwork, dolls, music, natural scenic trails, and more. Information available at OneidaNation.org.
Then I became one of People Magazine's most eligible bachelors. And that sounded good. And, I'm the nerd from high school, obviously, and so that was wonderful.
More true stories told live next time on the Moth Radio Hour from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturday afternoon at 3 on the Ideas Network.
In Wisconsin weather this afternoon, there is a heat advisory in effect this afternoon and early this evening for far western and southwestern Wisconsin.
Computers can be a tool or a toy or sometimes both at the same time, but however we use them, it can be hard to keep up with the latest news and product releases. Do you feel like you're keeping up with the new developments, or do you worry that you might be missing out on some helpful improvements or some really great improvements? Larry Mueller here, happy to have you along on the Ideas Network. Peter Green of InfoStar here until 12:30 to give us advice and to answer your questions. And he'll also share this month's top 10 list of useful websites. I hope you'll join in our conversation by calling us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. And don't forget our Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show. And while you're there, like it on the computer, and you'll get regular updates on upcoming show topics. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. Pete, this time of the program, we usually take a look at the top 10 list, things that you found over the course of the last month that are pretty cool places to go to. What have you got for us?
The web is not a boring place.
No, it isn't.
All right, they're all either current top 10 or if you go to the archives and scroll down to today's date. The first one is discoveryeducation.com, and it's by the Discovery Channel, and it's a great resource for students and teachers. Mm-hmm. The next one is aza.org, and I just happened to notice that Madison's Vila Zoo is celebrating its 100 years. And the AZA.org is the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, and it's a network of over 6,000 zoos, which is zoos and aquarium professionals. It's amazing. Number three is active.com, and it's a searchable directory and guide of sports events. So if you're looking for more triathlons or multi-sport races,
or
summer camps
or
whatever,
yeah.
It's a great resource to know. The next one is produced by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, U.S. Department of Health and Human Resources, and the Ad Council. They're trying to educate us about fighting food poisoning, and it's called Fight Back. So it's fight and then BAC.org. Number five is it's a .com, but it's a .com with a little symbol, It's google.com/plus. I know you had a guest talking about social networking. Well, Facebook now has some serious competition to it. I put a link to an article that talks about some useful things to know about Google Plus. Probably the key thing is to realize that Google does more. You know, Google has been the search engine, and Google has Gmail, and Google has Google Docs, and now they've come up with another attempt at social networking, but they've probably nailed it this time. And Facebook is Facebook. So to me, the writing is on the wall, and what's going on with Facebook is that they now have over 500 investors, which is going to force them to do an IPO sometime in early 2012. And so it's going to be an interesting play how quickly Google Plus can roll it out. Number six is called Business Insider. It's just another viewpoint on a variety of topics, and of course they cover the debt crisis and what's going on with it. Number seven, I got introduced to this with my iPhone because they have an app, but it's called CarBuzz.com, and it's just easy to use, well-organized resource about cars and the industry news, and just It's just pretty neat. And I like cars. I know I'm not the only one. Number eight is Petersons.com, so it's Peter and then SONS.com. And it's a comprehensive guide to colleges and graduate schools. And I know I used it when I applied for graduate school. And it just gives you an idea of applicants for positions open if you're applying for graduate school. And it's just a great resource to know about if you're looking at not only colleges, but, you know, going further. Number nine, I happen to see this on, I don't know if it was ABC News or Nightline or one of their shows, but this guy is a memory savant, and it's Stephen, so it's Stephen Wiltshire, Wiltshire.com, and he's an artist that draws and paints cityscapes, and it's just some of the work that he's done is just phenomenal. And number 10 is epa.gov. And it's about our U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which has been around for 40 years. I can't say they've done everything right over those 40 years. Mm-hmm. And then they also have a Superfund site that you might want to check out as well.
There you have it. And then,
and then the other thing is, new versions, Internet Explorer 9, which has been in beta testing, is, you know, now officially released. And then also Firefox has got Firefox 5, which is a pretty neat upgrade too.
There you go. And Jesse in Elkhorn has a question for you. Peter, let's go to Jesse. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question was regarding, we replaced our desktop computer downstairs with a laptop, and we were considering selling or donating our old computer because it works fine, there's nothing wrong with it. But for peace of mind, is there really, truly a way to erase everything off of it so nobody else can, you know, see any kind of old documents or anything like that? And if not, what should you do before you send it off for recycling? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, you can do a number of things. One is if the system happened to come with a restore CD, you could restore it to factory settings and wipe it clean that way. You might want to do it. You could do it twice just to make sure. So that basically reformats the drive and then reinstalls all the factory settings. So that's one thing to do. The other is to there's a website called FDISK, FDISK.com, or you can also do a search on it with your favorite search engine in terms of how to use FDISK, and you can basically wipe the drive clean so you can delete the partitions that are set up on the drive and then reinstall new different partitions. You might want to do that a couple of times and then format the drive with the operating system and then just leave it at that. The other thing is if you were to just outright just, you know, get rid of it, what I did I was the first one to that Dane County recycling this year. I actually got, I had a van full of computers. And what I did was I opened up the computers and I actually physically destroyed the hard drives. The computers were, you know, so old they weren't going to be used anymore. And I had had problems with them. And whatever problems they had, I didn't want them, someone else to inherit them. So you can actually physically, you know, destroy the hard drive, take it out. You could also run a real strong magnet over it. Just leave it on it overnight if you want. And that'll screw up the media as well, so you can't do anything with it.
There you go. Thanks a lot for that. Jeff in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Well, good afternoon, I guess it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about Google Earth. I'm not much of a computer buff, but I like to play with Google Earth once in a while.
Yep.
And when I zoom in on the Earth, it stays black all the way down to... to the very end, as far as I can get, and also when it focuses on Africa instead of North America, when it comes on, somehow it's shifted. I don't know how this or when it really happened, but I was wondering if there's an upgrade that you can download or
how old is the computer or young?
Probably about 4 years.
4 years. I know Google Earth has done some stuff with their rendering, you know, for displays, and I'm just wondering if you're hitting the edge of what they're working with.
Yeah.
I know I used it when I traveled, when I planned my trip with my two kids to Greece. I used it as a tool for planning to understand proximity of, you know, locations and what to expect to see based on pictures that people would post and comments and things like that. So it's a great tool. But I know they've gone through certain changes to how much they're displaying, and you might be at the limit
in terms of the age of the computer.
Yeah. You might want to download the latest version and see how it comments based on your system. You may have to download something else. I think they're using something with DirectX.
Okay.
And you may need to upgrade that on your system, too.
Okay. There you go. Good luck. Thank you, Jeff, for calling. And Maya, on to you now in Junction City. Hi, Maya.
Hi. Hi. I have a printer question. I have an HP PhotoSmart C6180, about 3 years old, and connected to a Dell laptop. And all of a sudden last week, I can't even turn it on. I mean, there's no power to it. And I unplugged, but the laptop is fine. And I unplugged all the plugs between the connections between the laptop and the printer, and still nothing. And we've had a lot of electrical storms, and I'm wondering, could it have been zapped, but the laptop is fine?
It's possible. There is a. Do you have like a little black power box
that
hooks up to the printer?
Yes.
Does that have a light on it?
Oh, I'll look.
Because sometimes those go.
Oh no, it does not have a light on.
Yeah.
Oh, there's another one. Wait, there's two black boxes.
Yeah.
And neither one has a light.
Yeah. Check and make sure that the plug is. Unplug it and plug it back in and make sure that it's snug. Sometimes they can work themselves loose or the connection is bad. But, yeah, with storms, if you're not plugged into a surge protector that's actually protecting against surges, electrical devices do and can be affected.
Yeah.
And it can be affected separately from the laptop.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you, then I'll check that.
Yeah, right. I've seen lightning come in and actually follow network wiring and to the computer and actually just take out the card and blacken the chip.
Whoa.
But not take out the computer, which is good.
Yeah,
because that's even worse. Replacing a card is not very expensive.
Greg in La Crosse, we're on to you now. Hi, Greg.
Thanks, gentlemen.
You bet.
Say, I've been having trouble printing since I got my MacBook Pro with the Intel processor, And finally yesterday I figured out that it would print PDF files in preview, and I've been trying to print files open in Adobe Acrobat, which most of them are in. And I cannot figure out why it won't print from Adobe Acrobat. My Motorola-based older MacBook Pro prints just fine.
If you do some searches on the internet web, you might find that it's actually a problem with the operating system in the printer that you're trying to talk to. I actually have a problem like that right now.
Yeah, our, I'm with the university, and our IT people said there were some problem with older HP printers that a newer one. I forgot to mention that I print Wi-Fi, but the printer is USB, and it's connected to the USB port at the airport.
Yeah, I know some of the devices that are prior, that are older, like what you're referring to, and in my case, it's an older Canon color laser printer, is that they worked on creating device drivers, but they're not compatible or do not seem to work with the newer version of the Mac OS.
But I can print everything except stuff opened in Adobe.
Yeah. So it's just...
just a glitch.
It's just a glitch. Yep. And sometimes you can complain to them and they do something about it, and sometimes you can complain to them and they go, oh, well.
Yeah.
So you might want to do a search on your particular version of the OS that you're using on the Mac and the printer, and see what you come up with in terms of comments and other people. And sometimes there are workarounds that people have figured out, and sometimes there aren't.
Worth the look anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks for calling. An email from Judy in Wild Rose. I'm attempting to connect to our Wi-Fi to register my new Nook color in order to use it. After entering the password for our network, it says obtain IP address. Then it goes no further. I've unplugged the modem, phone company, and router and waited and restarted, all with the same result. Any suggestions?
Well, it's seeing the Wi-Fi, and you give them the password, so then it's trying to obtain the IP address.
Yeah.
My only suggestion would be to, if you can, you have to look at the settings in the router to see what IP address you could potentially give your Nook, and assign it an IP address yourself. So you would have to go into either the settings, options, or preferences in the Nook to see where you could actually do that. So in other words, you're kind of like hardwiring it yourself with the settings versus letting the Nook go figure it out. And then in terms of, what are they in the router, if you click on your... depending upon the operating system you're using, the little icons in the lower right-hand corner of your screen, you can like right mouse click on it, click on properties, or double click on it, and then click on the network sharing center. And then you'd have to click on the adapter to see what the IP address is for the adapter, and then just probably advance your IP by maybe, 10-digit increment, so that you're not, similar to other devices on your network. But the other thing is Barnes & Noble and Nook might have an alternative for you to try.
Yeah.
And then the other part is that sometimes these things don't always work right out of the box, and that there's actually a problem.
Yeah,
which I've had happen too.
Yeah, caller Marge from Clark County wanted to pass along that the Kindle, going back to the Kindle for a minute, can be used to read aloud to the user, but the Nook can't. And then the Kindle is, another email from Walt says the Kindle is not backlit in any version. It is not really a tablet. And here's a caller wanted to say that he's used Replay AV for years. It will record from the internet. It can be scheduled for multiple programs which recur. So that's another one from a previous call. And callers Steve from Wales and Bruce from Monona came up with the same answer for the scrambled icons when doing a presentation. Both said that the projectors have a different default resolution, and as a result, the icons get scrambled. No way to get around it unless you set your own desktop at the same resolution as the projector. Hmm. But that's probably not optimal.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a couple there. And a Facebook comment from Josh in response to the woman who called about her 2008 MacBook. There are a number of freeware and pay applications that can monitor your temperature and boost your fan RPMs. Hmm. If your MacBook is running too hot, I had the same issue with my 2008 Mac. Make sure your fan is actually running too. The late 2008, the aluminum one from MacBook, has an issue with fan failures and hot running temperatures.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And here's another suggestion. We have all kinds of good ones here that follow up. I'm glad to be getting to these. This is from our Facebook again. Facebook comment from Lois. To get a website that may be blocked, try removing the cookies for that website. I've had this happen twice with my Mac. Tech support from one company and tech support from AT&T for another site suggested that, and it really worked. In fact, AT&T suggested routinely removing all cookies to avoid such problems, like every week or so, but she hasn't tried that yet. So those are some
great ideas.
Some great ideas, and I hope all those folks who called in earlier were still listening. But finally, we get so many Facebook and email questions along with everything else that, and I can only see one or two at a time, or maybe three at a time. So Judith is diligently putting those in. Her little fingers are going to be just worn to a frazzle from all that typing. Oh, man. Email from Kathy in Fifield. Why are there different costs for different internet connection speeds? Doesn't it all travel at the same rate? Is it an artificial cost for faster connections?
Well, that's called free enterprise.
Yeah.
I had a relative call me about signing up for internet out east for their daughter that's going to graduate school. And basically I said, you know, it was probably a starting point for, you know, speed-wise, you want to look at like maybe a 5 meg download is being considered probably pretty common ground and standard. and then the question would become, you know, do you bundle it with other services, and are there special rates in trying to forego paying for installation? And are other devices included, like routers and modems, which maybe it costs, or do you charge rental fees for those? And then you look at your phone company as a provider, your cable company as a provider, your satellite service provider, Wi-Fi versus, you know, through cellular providers, whether or not that's even an alternative. And they all are providing access to the same network, and they charge different rates. Yep.
David,
I think it should be for free, personally.
David and Stevens Point, you have a quick question?
Yes, I have an older desktop that does not have a wireless card, and I want to hook up to the Sprint system, which I have on my phone now. Mm-hmm. Do you have a suggestion regarding whether I put a wireless in this 5-year-old computer or buy a new one?
Well, you're using Sprint wireless service for internet?
Yes, but I also have a cable. Right now I have a cable connecting to the older desktop.
Okay.
And I have a laptop that I can connect to the Sprint network with.
So are you using a network, a Sprint card from them to hook up to their network as well?
No.
So you're trying to see if you can use Sprint Wireless to hook up for your desktop.
That's correct. Okay. The reason I can't right now is it doesn't have a wireless card.
Right. Yeah, you see, they track their wireless connections through IPs, which they establish by each one of their cards or devices. So that would be the only way you could hook that up, and they would probably charge you more on top of what you're already paying to do that.
Yeah, there you go. With that, we have to conclude. Thank you for calling, David. Pete, thank you so much. You'll be back in a month, and we'll do this all over again.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in as well. Tomorrow at 11, we'll get some great travel advice from Rick Seney, CEO of FairCompare.com. That's at 11. Then at 11:45, we'll talk about something, a place I like to go to, the county fair. We'll talk about county fairs in Wisconsin at 11:45 tomorrow here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.